Hi, this is Sid Lieberman, and today's cut is from my album Lieberman Live, which was recorded at the 2002 National Storytelling Festival in Jonesboro, Tennessee.
Thank you, thank you. I'm going to do two little stories for you and then a kind of a P.S. at the end. It's actually nice that I'm starting because the first story I have is really about sacred stories. A few years ago, I was at the Indianapolis Storytelling Festival, and the sacred hour was about to begin. And to tell you the truth, I wasn't feeling very sacred. I was kind of miserable. I don't know, I had a miserable weekend. I probably hadn't slept well, or the stories had gone wrong. And I kind of felt like Scrooge. I was walking around saying, sacred hour, sacred story. What's a sacred story? And it was time to go, and I started to go toward the tent. And then I got my answer. I knew what a sacred story was. Because as I headed to the tent, as I passed a baseball field, three little girls decided they were going to play baseball. Now, they didn't have a bat or a ball, but that didn't stop them. One was 9, one was 7, and one was 3. They installed the 3-year-old on the mound. The 7-year-old got up to bat, and she had watched baseball. She was standing there like a batter. The 9-year-old had watched baseball. She got down like a catcher. And then they both began to yell to their 3-year-old on the mound, the 3-year-old sister, "Okay, Mary, throw the ball. Throw the ball." Now, this is a problem for Mary. Because there was no ball. So Mary began to look for the ball on the mound, and she was walking around, and they kept yelling, "Mary, throw the ball, throw the ball." And Mary was getting more and more nervous, and they started to go like this, and so Mary just went like this. And the batter swung and started to run to first base, and then they began to yell, "Mary, get the ball." Well, that was a real problem. Because she hadn't thrown anything, and now she had to get it. And so she began to run around in wilder circles and finally got so upset that she began to chase the batter towards second base. When the batter saw that she was following, she stopped and she turned around and she said, "No, Mary, no, Mary, go get the ball. Get the ball, Mary." And Mary, in complete frustration, just plopped on the ground and began crying. Well, the sisters had a little meeting and they decided that they were going to install Mary as the batter. I didn't know how that was going to help. But they put Mary up to bat, and the 7-year-old got on the mound. They showed Mary how she should stand, and the 7-year-old said, "Okay, here comes the ball, Mary." And they yelled, "Swing, Mary," and Mary didn't know what to do, and they said, "Swing," and Mary looked around. She did this, and they said, "Oh, you hit the ball, Mary. Run to first base." And Mary started to run to first base, and the pitcher said, "I've got the ball, Mary. I'm going to tag you out." And she began to run behind Mary just slow enough so that if Mary, you know, ran like this, she wouldn't be tagged. And Mary was squealing and laughing. She was so happy. And she reached first base, and the sisters began to yell, "You're safe, Mary, you're safe, Mary, you're safe." And Mary was jumping up and down on first base, and then they all grabbed hands and they began to dance around first base, yelling, "You're safe, Mary, you're safe, Mary." And then it was time to go to the sacred hour. And I never learned the final score. I never knew who won. I didn't even know who was playing, but it didn't matter because I knew what a sacred story was. It's a story that contains faith in the unseen, love and care and concern for your sisters and your brothers, and God willing, stories filled with squeals of joy. Thank you, thank you. When I knew I was going to be part of the sacred hour, I was trying to think of a story that spoke in some way to what happened on September 11th. And I found one in my tradition, the Jewish tradition. It's a story about Solomon. Now, Solomon was the wisest king on the face of the earth. He was a great king. He had power and he had jewels and gold, but he was known for his wisdom. And he had one minister, Benaiah. And Benaiah was his best minister. No matter what Solomon asked him to do, he was able to do it. And so he was a wonderful man, but he had one fault. He bragged about what he could do. He was a proud man, and he was always bragging to the other ministers that he was Solomon's best minister, that he was able to do whatever Solomon asked. And Solomon finally thought, I must humble him. And so he called Benaiah to him one day, and he said, I'd like you to find a special ring. And Benaiah said, King Solomon, if it's on the face of the earth, I will find it. But what makes it so special? And the king said, it has the power to make a sad person happy and a happy person sad. Now, of course, there was no such ring, but he wanted to give Benaiah a taste of humility. He said, you have 6 months. I would like to wear that ring for the festival of Sukkot. And so Benaiah began his search. He went throughout Jerusalem, throughout the entire country. He visited every jeweler, but none had heard of such a ring. He stopped the caravans and talked to the drivers who had been to Egypt and Babylon, to the spice lands of the east, and none of them had heard of such a ring. He went to the ports and he talked to the sea captains who had sailed the seven seas, and none of them had heard of such a ring. And 6 months went by. And the night before he had to meet Solomon, he walked the streets. He was so sad that for the first time, he was not able to do what the king wanted. At dawn, he was in the poorest section of Jerusalem. And he saw a jeweler putting out his wares. He thought, ah, well, maybe there'll be a miracle. And he went to the jeweler and he said, do you have a ring that can make a sad person happy and a happy person sad? And the jeweler said, I've never heard of such a ring. And Benaiah started to walk away, but the jeweler's grandfather was sitting there, and he called his grandson over to him, and he whispered something to him. And the jeweler turned around, and he said, please, please, wait, I think I can help you. Benaiah came back. The jeweler picked up a simple gold ring, and he engraved something on it and handed it to Benaiah. When Benaiah saw it, he smiled. He gave the boy a bag of gold, and he went to the court. Now, the big moment came. Solomon thought to himself, well, I will finally tell him what I have done so he will understand that he shouldn't brag all the time. But it turned out that it was Solomon who was going to learn a lesson. He said to Benaiah, do you have my ring? And surprisingly, for Solomon, Benaiah stood up and took out a ring and handed it to him. And when Solomon saw it, he smiled too. He took off his ring and he gave it to Benaiah and he said, I will wear the ring you have just given me for the rest of my days because of the wisdom that is engraved on it. For engraved on that ring were the words, and this too shall pass. Thank you. Thank you. And as a kind of a P.S., last year I was inducted into the Circle of Excellence, and we didn't have a lot of time to say a lot of things. And this was something that I wanted to say, but it's even better to say it here, and you'll see why. Also, this is a story that happened to me many, many years ago. I used to go in Chicago to watch softball games in a park down in the city. And the games were going on, and then there would always be there these pickup bands, too. And I would watch a game, then I'd go over and watch one of these bands. And one day when I was there, there was a group of drummers. There were about six drummers, black fellows. The leader was so cool. He was all in white. He had a white turban, cross earrings, a little goatee, black shades, a white dashiki, white pants, white shoes. And he was, I don't know what they call him. He was hitting on one of these drums. They had that. They had smaller drums. They had Congo drums. And these six guys, they were so good. And everybody was kind of dancing around to him. And this white guy was watching the six guys. And he said, you mind if I sit in? And the leader kind of looked at him and said, sure. Now, he took his drum opposite that leader. And they began to drum. And as soon as they started, you knew this white guy was a good drummer. And the leader knew it, too, because I was standing right behind the white guy's shoulder. And he looked over his shades, the leader. And he caught the white guy's eye. And they took off. Everything else stopped. It was like dueling drums. And these guys were, oh, man, it was wonderful. Electricity went through the crowd. People were dancing. But at that point, all of a sudden, this old guy next to me, he started to go like this. And the crowd was going crazy. And it was so good. And then all of a sudden, it ended. And the white guy said to the black guy, hey, thank you. And the guy said, sure. And he walked away. And they were good after that. But they were never good as that moment. And as I was standing there thinking about that, I thought to myself, you know, in your lifetime, what you have to do is find your drum, whatever it is, and then you have to learn how to beat it, and beat it well. And then maybe most important, you have to find a place where what you do will be appreciated. Well, 19 years ago, I found my drum of storytelling. And over the years, I've been learning how to beat that drum. But perhaps most important, I've been able to beat it in front of you, people who appreciate it. So thank you.
I hope you enjoyed listening. This story is distributed under a Creative Commons license, which requires attribution for all reproduction and prohibits commercial use. Find out more about me at my website, sidlieberman.com. That's SYDLIEBERMAN.com.